Occupy Wall Street movement, or the Indignatus or Indignant Ones. The names change depending on the country concerned, but the overall concept is the same. There's a growing movement of mainly, but not just, young people who are protesting against global economic inequalities. Last weekend, there were over 1,500 demonstrations in 82 countries across the world by people in this loosely knit movement. They were protesting against what they call the corrosive power of major banks and the financial sector, and the role of Wall Street in triggering the global financial crisis and the worldwide austerity measures that followed on from that. But what is the significance of this growing protest movement that so far is without leaders and has not allied itself with any specific political grouping? Is it a new ideology? And what moral message is it trying to convey? Father Sean Healy is Director of Social Justice in Ireland, and he believes this protest movement has shone the spotlight on the deepening inequalities in our modern society, especially in the wake of the 2008 global financial crisis.
I think the movement that has emerged in recent months is very significant, because I think what it's doing is challenging the sort of dominant understanding of the way the world should be organized. And they're also challenging what they see to be a fair and just approach to addressing the difficulties of our time. For example, they see a situation in recent years in which banks, for example, and the financial sector have been able to recoup the losses that they incurred through huge gambling and reckless gambling, and some of it actually with serious legal questions attached to it. But all of that money has been recouped to the banks and the financial sector generally through a process of the nation states actually taking on the debt. And in practice, the nation state then has had to adjust their tax systems and their social services and so on, so that they can provide a huge proportion of their tax income to actually pay off the debt that was recklessly incurred by bankers and by the financial sector. And that, in effect, has resulted in a process in which resources are being taken from poor people, vulnerable people, low-income people, and those resources are being moved into supporting the banks and repaying the bondholders who took the risks earlier on in this past decade. The cost has been huge. For example, if you take a country like Ireland, welfare rates have been reduced, social services have been dramatically cut, the income of people has fallen dramatically. The bigger part of the hit has been borne by people who are poor, people who are on welfare, and the working poor, and people who are on low to middle incomes. At the same time, people who were already doing very, very well have taken a much smaller portion of the hit. So you wind up with a situation where inequality, which was hugely problematic, deepens and poverty increases.
So you could say there's a growing polarization between the haves and the have-nots.
And that is exactly what has been happening, that there is a growing polarization between the haves and the have-nots, and that the have-nots are beginning to realize that this is not an accident and that this is not the result of some relentless law of economics. That in actual fact, it's the result of decisions taken by decision makers that have basically resulted in the protection of the really wealthy and better off, who are people like the bondholders and banks and the main players in the banks and the financial services. And on the other side, the hit has been borne by people with little or no voice, people who were already poor, who were already vulnerable, people who were on low incomes, the working poor, as I say.
Michael O'Bourne is a director of the Las Casas Institute in Oxford, England, sponsored by the Dominican Order, that studies ethics and social justice issues. He agrees with Father Healy about the root causes of this global protest movement.
The causes are, I believe, at least four causes, immediate causes. One is youth unemployment, which is quite high in many of the OECD countries and in the developing countries. So it's the cohort of 18 to 34 who have high unemployment rates. There are very low growth rates. rates in all of the countries that these protests have taken place, in particular in Europe and the North America. This is at the same time that austerity measures are being put in place by governments to meet the requirements of the financial crisis that took place in 2009 and 2010 and is ongoing. So cutbacks in spending, in education, infrastructure, and entitlements right at the time when economies need inputs to create new growth. And this is in the context of financial market crises. So there's a climate of crises in the industrial countries that has given an environment for these protest movements.
But is it largely a generational clash, as some commentators have claimed? Father Healy again.
I think all movements of this kind are going to be powered by young people, but it isn't a sort of a youth protest thing at all. I wouldn't accept that that's what it is. By definition, by experience, it is always young people who have the time and the energy and the sort of view of the world to go out and start protesting in one form or another. But the actual analysis that supports their position is very widely shared and is certainly not confined to young people and is certainly not confined to one view of the world either. There's a growing recognition that since about 2008, the basic model that we have been working on in the Western world and peddling off to the developing world as well is actually very, very flawed and needs to be adjusted if it's to survive. Certainly the old model is broken and we need a model that is fairer.
O'Born says governments will ignore at their peril the grievances being expressed by the young protesters.
And the protesters are largely unorganized. I mean, it's not a political movement. They're young in general. They're well-educated. And in many cases, they appear to be either part-time employed or not employed. So there's a context for this, a social context. As such, there are no specific political demands right at this moment and no true leadership as there would be in a political movement. So what you're getting is the situation is evolving quickly where diverse groups, seeing that the protesters are getting more publicity, are joining with the protesters and thereby, in some sense, changing the base of the movement itself. So what started out as maybe focused on greed, which was focused on greed of a certain perception of the banking and financial markets and the under-regulation of these markets has now spread to general protests against social disinclusion. So you're finding these movements are really incarnating quite a number of ideas that don't necessarily go together in these protest movements. But it's not an uprising of the poor, as it would be in perhaps a more revolutionary setting. It is really characterized itself as a middle class that has been disenfranchised and has little future. So there's a crisis of expectation and hope among the young. And this is a climate that is created by the economic performance of our countries. And it can lead to more troublesome situations if not addressed by governments.
But when it comes to the Catholic Church, can it play a role in this situation? A question I put to Father Healy.
Well, I think the thing that the Church should be doing is articulating clearly the lack of justice in the current situation and the huge injustices that have been caused and perpetrated on poor people and on vulnerable people and on people who are on the margins. But I think the Church also has an obligation to go beyond that, because that has been in some ways its traditional understanding of what it has done. I think it also needs to go beyond to actually look concretely at possible alternatives and ideas, not getting involved now in promoting any ideology or any particular political perspective, but in developing a capacity to analyze reality in a fairly complex world, but able to do that and do it competently and capably, and being able then to sort of use that analysis to critique proposals that come, and even to suggest ideas or possible pathways or whatever towards a future that would be fair, just, sustainable. In other words, a future that would be much closer to the kinds of idea of a just society that would be consistent with the Church's own teaching.
Make it a better place for you. A number of world leaders, including the UN Secretary General and President Obama, have expressed sympathy with the protesters' demands. But how likely are Western governments to agree to their demands for a fairer society? Father Healy says he fears governments and decision makers will be reluctant to carry out the sweeping reforms that are needed.
Western governments aren't prepared to take those decisions now, at this moment. Without a doubt, they want to continue with just some small variations on the situation as it actually has been for quite some time. My own view would be that they will continue that for another while, but that this will provide no solution. There will be no long-term solution by trying to reinvent the system by simply putting back in place what has already failed. Taking the same initiatives over and over again and expecting different outcomes is a bit daft, but I think it'll have to get a bit dafter before leaders decide that they must take the actual choice or must take the decisions that will actually get to the root causes of these problems. We need a situation in which decisions are made that will actually benefit all of society.
Coming back to the movement, so far it's leaderless and it hasn't really put forward any concrete proposals. Could that hamper its effectiveness in the long run?
I think in the long run, there has to be proposals. There will have to be proposals about what you actually do. For example, to me, a very simple one on the banks would be that we have to deal with the issue of moral hazard in banks and in financial institutions. There is a huge moral hazard issue in a situation in which banks and financial institutions can gamble enormous amounts of money, take huge risks, lose the money, and are still guaranteed to get their 100% of their money back. And yet, there is nothing being done to actually change that. There was some talk a year and a half ago maybe, that it needed to be addressed. I think now that the banks have convinced the politicians that it shouldn't be done. The politicians think they can get away without doing it. I think it is simply a no-brainer. It's very obvious that we're going to be back in this situation again and again and again, until such time as the issue of moral hazard in the financial institutions of the world is actually dealt with.
According to O'Bourne, governments must offer young people a participative role in our society, or the situation risks spiralling out of control.
It's a very explosive kind of environment, where young people with energy and with educational background are questioning the fundamentals of the systems themselves. And in part, the Occupy Wall Street is exactly that. On their website, they proclaim openly that they are not looking to change the rules of the system, but to change the underlying fundamentals of what they call the capitalist system. Not well defined, but it's the term they're using.
So you say they're wanting to change the fundamentals of the system. Is it in effect a new ideology that is emerging from this protest movement? Shall we say that they feel that the capitalist system is too flawed?
Well, that has, of course, been around for 200 years as an idea that was originally developed by economists in the early 19th century, and then Marx, of course, and a whole school of followers developed the idea that capitalism was fundamentally flawed. From practice of systems, socialists, capitalists, and others over the last 200 years have shown that not to be the case. It's not flawed in the same sense that it was analyzed in the 1850s. But what is emerging now is a return to some of those observations about equity, about what is characterized in terms that are emotional, such as the term greed of Wall Street, the greed of banks, this type of thing. It's not yet focused on responsibilities and duties of all citizens to maintain an equal society with equal opportunities. And that doesn't mean everybody gets the same income or everybody is at the same level of income. In fact, it means that everyone, in the Western interpretation, everyone has the opportunity to use the skills that they have to find a role in society that is remunerated through what we call work. So there's a right, in a sense, this is what's being advanced now, there is a right to participate in society as a working citizen. And it would be extremely dangerous for society to marginalize, particularly young people, by not offering them a participatory role in the democratic societies in which we live. This could create a serious kind of ideological gap.
So how real is that risk of violence? Let's hear more on that issue from my interview with Father Healy.
Do you see the Occupy Wall Street or Indignatus movement evolving in the future? And of course, the very important question is, can it stay non-violent? Because, you know, we already saw how professional rioters hijacked a peaceful protest in Rome. And of course, any kind of protest movement can go astray.
I think it's critically important that it stay non-violent. I think once these kinds of movements go violent, then we have a serious problem that becomes a distraction from what's possible. So in that sense, I think there's a real danger that things get lost. If violence becomes part of the way it operates, then I think there's real trouble down the line for it, and I don't think it will survive. I don't think that violence is the answer, ever.
The Occupy Wall Street or Indignatus movement began in a small way in just one country, but has tapped into a swelling chord of public anger over global austerity measures that continue to bite harder. But will the movement eventually fizzle out, or is it likely to continue to grow in momentum? Father Healy says predictions are difficult to make, but believes in any case the movement has laid bare a core problem of our contemporary society.
I have no doubt in the world that they have identified a core problem in modern society. They have put their finger right on the core issue, that the paradigm, the basic paradigm on which society has worked for the past 30, 40 years and more is actually fundamentally flawed. That the paradigm, they're very clear about the fact that the paradigm is broken. And I would agree with that. I think they're absolutely right on that. And moving it forward is then a question of seeing how one chooses to proceed and so on. I'm not sure how they will do it. But I know myself that whatever way it proceeds, it should be based on good social analysis. It should be based on an accurate reading of what's taking place. And it should be based on values such as fairness and justice and sustainability and human dignity that are critically important if we're to have a sustainable, viable future in which people want to live. And I think that set of values are core to the church's teaching, and I think that they should be therefore supported strongly by the church.
I was speaking there to Father Sean Healy, Director of Social Justice in Ireland. And earlier you heard the voice of Michael O'Bourne, Director of the Las Casas Institute in Oxford, England. Make it a better place.